You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Matt Parrish. We got a couple of trips to recap this week, and we have some slight changes in just the weather in general. You'll notice that it is it's colder. For the most part, it's been colder in the mornings, and then it's still heating up pretty warm in the afternoon. Also, the water level out there has been higher than normal. We had a ridiculously high tide this past week. It got over 3 feet. It's like 3.08 or something like that over MLLW. So that's pretty insane for this time of year. What has it done? I think this is the time of year where you can get fooled by that. If that water goes up overnight, typically, it's not the greatest idea to follow it way, way, way to the back just because there's water there. There are some places and some marshes where I'm finding fish way in the back, but by and large, that's not happening. I am still finding fish shallow. And so if you hear one thing that I say this week, this is what you need to hear. You have to find large populations of mullet if you want to find redfish right now. So a good example of that, I was out with Chris. We struggled early on to find fish, checked several locations, eventually found some, and I can't remember how many we caught that day, but we caught fish. Caught several redfish. And then I took Reed out, one of my twins. I told my twins this weekend, I said, hey, my birthday's on Monday. I am fishing on Sunday. The conditions on Sunday looked amazing. And I was like, I'm fishing. Y'all can both come with me. You can both stay home. Whatever you want to do, but I'm fishing for my birthday. I would love it if you join me. My golfer, Bo, he elected to not go, which in his defense, he told me that if Reed didn't want to go, that he would go. But I could tell he really didn't want to. But Reed is the fisherman of the group. He enjoys that that kind of thing. He's the one that's fished those tournaments with me. And so Reed decided to go. So I'll go Saturday night. I take Bo. We go eat at Buffalo Wild Wings. He's on a wing kick, so that's where we've been going to eat. And we eat. We get back to their house, their mom's house, and I do my normal. I go in. I shake their stepdad's hand. I hug their two brothers. I hug the ex-wife and visit for a minute, and then I'm me and Reed are out the door. Why do I tell you that? I'm getting to that. Give me a minute. So we go fishing, and we go straight down to the bay house, stayed there that night, got up in the morning. We did not launch until 8:15, 8:30, something like that. And the reason for that is this is just that time of year where the water is very clear. And if you have a low wind day, even if you have a high wind day, if you can find the right areas, and you get lucky and everything marries up together, you can sight cast. But you can't sight cast if the sun's not up. And so a lot of times when it's cold like this, I'm not in a huge rush to get out. But my default is still launching around sunrise. I like to be out there when the sun's coming up. But you're going to spend a couple hours blind casting if you do that. But hey, there's a lot of fish caught in those couple of hours usually. So it's a catch 22. You don't have to go out super early. You can get out there as the sun starts to come up and you get a good look at the fish, and it's more fun to sight cast. We don't get to do that all year long, and so the times that we do, I like to take advantage of it. I'll launch a little bit later and try to stay out on the water a little later into the afternoon than I normally would. And so that's what we did on Saturday. And we got out to the first stop into a place where I had found fish, quite a few redfish for the past couple of weeks. I think we saw two or three redfish in that spot. So I picked up and went not too far, just to a second little spot, a short little 100-yard pole into this little pocket of the marsh, and did not see one redfish there. And so I started to get nervous, like, what's going on here? So I picked up and I went to a third spot, and we saw about 10 redfish there, but they were scattered and they were very spooky, and the wind direction and the conditions had us not being able to see them until they were too close. And so I wasn't seeing enough mullet. And so I was like, you know, I think we can go find more fish. I'm not seeing the bait that we need to see. So we loaded up and took a decent boat ride to a place that I thought was going to be the spot to find the mullet. And we found giant rafts of mullet, finger mullet, and also some larger horse mullet. And when we found that, we started finding fish. And we had already seen total maybe 15 fish in those other spots. But we started seeing, I mean, we were seeing a fish or groups of fish every 15 yards, 20 yards. It was incredible. More fish than maybe I've ever seen on a trip. We had to have seen 85 fish, somewhere around that, as I tried to like put it all together in my head. And so here's the thing. Got my son out on the boat. It's very important to me that he catches the bug continually. Like, he already likes to do it, but I really want him to get good at it. I want him to catch the bug. So even though it's my birthday trip, I'm focusing on him catching fish, but I made a deal with him and I said, hey, I'm going to let you catch the first two redfish, and then you're going to get up here and push this boat, and I'm going to get on the bow, on the casting platform, and catch one on the fly. And when I catch one on the fly, I'll let you get back up there and catch some more fish. So as soon as we start seeing fish, he's getting some really good shots at fish, but he's missing. And it's hard. It's side casting, especially on a day that's clear blue sky, clear water, low wind. The fish tend to be a little more spooky. Your cast placement has to be right. And unless you've watched hundreds of redfish respond to a bait presentation, then you may not know. And so, you know, I tried to explain to him that, hey, I have a captain's license, and people pay me to take them to do this very thing. And I'm not, you know, I'm not like, you know, 20 years into this gig, but I know what I'm talking about and you should listen to me. But a 16-year-old boy thinks that he knows everything. And so I could tell he thought like, hey, this is the fish's fault. I'm doing everything right. And so after he missed about the 30th fish, he said, I'm doing everything right. And they're just not. I said, no, no, no. I said, you're not doing everything right. If you'll listen to me. So I told him, when you see the fish coming, you got to put it out 2 or 3 feet past him, 2 or 3 feet in front of him, reel it straight in front of his face. Don't slow it down, nothing. Your first pass through on that fish needs to be a straight reel in front of the face, and make him not have enough time to think about whether he wants to eat it. He needs to just smash it. So about 20 seconds after I said that, here comes two fish down the side of this shoreline, and he put a perfect cast in front of them, reeled it in front of their face. The first fish smashed it. And I started giving him a hard time and hooping and hollering and telling him that they don't call me Captain Matt for nothing. I was really getting on him, you know. And so he proceeded to mock me for the rest of the day at everything that happened. He would be like, oh, they don't call you Captain Matt for nothing, you know? So we had a good laugh about that. But then he started catching fish. And so he caught those first two fish. And I said, all right, a deal's a deal. Get up here and push. But here's the thing. Even though the wind wasn't very bad, we did have a light wind and it was in our face. And we had an outgoing tide that was moving pretty good, and we were pushing against the tide. And that poor boy got up there and could not keep the boat straight, running it into the shore, all that kind of stuff. And he's learning. It's not as easy as you think. It's just not. It takes a little time up there to get, especially when you have those conditions, you have a couple things working against you. Sometimes it can be a little difficult getting used to it. So I realized that he was up against, he had a losing battle on his hands. So I said, all right, let's just change this out. I'll get back up there. I'll push you down to the end of this shoreline. And, when we get to the end of it, I'll turn us around and you can push me back because you'll be with the tide, with the wind. It should be a lot easier. You know, it's a lot more forgiving. So he caught two more fish, missed several others. But that's, I mean, your percentage, even someone who's done it enough and who's good at it, your best percentage is probably going to be 60% of the fish. You're going to have 40% of the fish that just didn't like the way your lure splashed down. They looked at it, but didn't eat it. Like it just, you have a day like that. If you catch 60, even 70% of the fish that you got to look at, then you've done really, really well. He was probably more on the, I don't even know what the percentage was on that. He caught four fish out of about 85. So whatever that is. But he caught those four fish. And then we got down to the end of this shoreline and turned around. And he got up on the platform. And for the first 200 yards, we didn't see a fish at all. And we had just pulled through that area. So I thought, we're probably not going to see a fish for a good bit because they're still a little shaken from our presence early on. So we kept on moving. I didn't want to fire up and run out of that area because I knew there were still fish there and I didn't want to run them over. I didn't want to spook everything there. So I knew we had to push out and I knew that eventually we would see some fish. And so first two fish I got to look at, I put the fly in front of them. They both followed it and one of them like did this faint-hearted half strike at it and just missed it. And I was like, ugh. So they spooked off because they followed it right up to the boat. And right as I pulled that cast up, I pulled the fly up in the air, I saw another fish about 25 feet in front of me. I did a couple of false casts to get some more line out. I laid the fly in front of him about a foot past him, about a foot out in to his left, and screamed it past him because I felt like I had baby stripped in front of those other two fish and they didn't have like that reaction strike, so I kind of screamed it and past that other fish and he slammed it. So I caught that fish on a fly that was tied by my buddy Paul Randall, good looking fly. And after that, I got back up on the platform and pushed Reed the rest of the way out. And we saw some more fish, and he didn't have any luck. But he, from the time we got out there to the time we left, his skills on sight casting dramatically improved. And what can you? I mean, you cannot get any better than spending a day on the water with your son doing what you love. I mean, it was awesome. We had a good time. Joked around with each other, and it was a blast. I really enjoyed it. Wish Bo would have come out with us, but I understand that's really not his thing. We will go golfing together before too long. And so I woke up. That was Sunday. Monday, it was my birthday, and I had a lot of work to do. So I had a pretty busy work day. And then that evening, our neighbors Jake and Kristen, who we've known forever, and then good friends of ours that just live about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes away, Garrett and Haley, they came over. They're all their kids play with our kids. Like, we're just kind of our tribe in the city here. And so they came over, and we ate fajitas and sat around the fire, and it was a good little miniature birthday celebration. I go to bed that night. I wake up about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I don't feel so hot. And I try to go back to sleep. I wake up again around 5, and I've got that the cold sweat, like I'm about to throw up. So I get up, I run downstairs because I don't want to wake the whole house up, and I start throwing up. And I was sick all day yesterday. Today's Wednesday, so Tuesday, from 5 a.m. until I think I finally stopped throwing up somewhere around 5 o'clock that evening. But it was, I could not keep anything in my system. I couldn't keep water in my system, nothing. I was sick as a dog. Found out that my ex-wife and one of her sons, Lance, also sick as dogs with the same thing. So I thought I had food poisoning, but no, it was a stomach virus. So I have just barely recovered from it at this point. I still don't feel 100%. But I'm in a lot better condition than I was yesterday. So I don't know. I guess it's something going around. I really hope that my family doesn't get it, because my wife bought us tickets to go see the Nutcracker today, which, if I'm being honest, I am not excited about. That's not something I enjoy doing. But the domestic coordinator lets me slide on enough of that stuff to where I'm like, I need to take one for the team, and we're going to go do that, then we're going to go to dinner. And so I'm just going to have to man up and go to the Nutcracker. So that's what's happening. Fishing this week on Thursday and hopefully Friday, but the weather looks like it's going to rain on our parade on Friday. So we'll see. I'm watching closely to see what's going to happen there. But don't think, if you're going out, don't think that when you're pushing through a shallow marshy area and it's early, that, you know, water temperatures have been somewhere around 53 degrees in the morning, which is pretty cold, to, you know, 63 degrees in the afternoon, which is totally perfect. So don't think that just because it's 53 degrees that the in the water that the fish have dropped off into deep channels or deep holes. Some of them might have done that, but more than likely, you're not finding redfish because you're not finding mullet. If you're in poling through a shallow area and it's like, you know, anywhere from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., I think people's inclination is to go, oh, we're not seeing any bait, we're not seeing any fish, they must be deeper, and then they go fish deeper. Can you catch redfish in deeper water right now? Absolutely, you can. It's not my thing. I don't do that. I'm going to find them shallow. And so I guess what I'm telling you is there are redfish shallow, especially if you have sun on those days. If the sun starts peeking through, those redfish are going to be up shallow. You have to find mullet, not just like one or two mullet, big rafts of mullet. That's where you're going to find redfish. It got to the point in several of the last trips I took, where I would go up, there's a raft of mullet, where is the redfish or two that's following them around? And you would see them. I've seen redfish right smack in the middle of a group of mullet. I guess mullet are so stupid that they just allow the redfish to swim right in the middle of them like that. It's really bizarre. I don't quite understand that relationship. But I know that they're eating mullet. Chris kept a mullet last week and found an 8-inch mullet in that redfish's stomach. I also found a shotgun shell, which is common this time of year because of the duck hunting that goes on out there. But yeah, they're eating them, but the mullet just swim right along with them. And you'll find a big raft of mullet. You'll find a redfish or two swimming behind them. We saw a school of 9 redfish slowly cruising the shoreline together when I was out with Reed. And they were behind a giant raft of mullet. And so that's what you need to look for. Keep moving. I think it was my 4th stop is when I found them. And we ended up having one of the best days, at least for sighting, you know, seeing fish. I saw more fish that day than I've seen in a long time. And so, you know, even though we didn't catch them all, hey, that was a learning curve for Reed, and he's getting there. The next time I take him out, he'll double or triple that number when we have a day like that. So that's what you're looking for. Don't think that, oh, they're just not here. I mean, I see lots of people just go, oh, well, I'll fish a deeper area. Listen, if the mullet are not up shallow, they're not deep in the closest area. I will tell you that areas near deeper water seem to be holding more bait and more redfish. So if you have a flat that's close to the intercoastal, if you have a big canal and there's a flat or a little back pond that jets off the side of it or something like that, try those areas first. But I tried 2 of the areas I stopped in first when I was out with Reed on Sunday were those types of areas, and we didn't see hardly anything. Very few fish, very few mullets. So you just got to keep moving, because there are areas where the mullet are bunched up, and you're going to find the redfish bunched up in those spots as well. So I'm still throwing paddle tails or flies. The smaller the paddle tail, the better, in my opinion. But this is the time of year where you can get away with throwing a larger paddle tail. Mainly the reason I don't like to throw a larger paddle tail, even though they will eat it, is because of the entry into the water that bigger bait makes. It makes a splash, and even if you put that bait, you know, 2 or 3 feet past the fish and then reel it in front of them, you kind of got a 50-50 chance. They're either going to turn and be interested as to what that was, or they're going to spook off, you know. So not every day. You get some cloud cover, low pressure, I feel like the fish are more responsive to that and they eat a little easier. But I'm going for something small so that whenever I put it down in their vicinity that they're not freaking out over it and, you know, changing zip codes. So that's really it, folks. I don't see in the forecast a cold front coming, but I haven't looked at the 10-day. I've only looked at this week. But I think January is going to be whenever that big one comes. So I'll be keeping my eye on that and on the water levels. But this week, it's going to be more of the same. And then we've got that weather system moving in this weekend, but I don't see any crazy winds with it. I'm not seeing any kind of like marsh dump kind of stuff happening. Unless it's going to happen on Saturday and Sunday, I have admittedly not checked the weather there, but I'm looking at it as we speak. No, it's not showing anything crazy. Pretty mild winds actually this weekend. And so not crazy mild, but you know, 10, 11, 12 miles an hour. So shouldn't be that big of a deal. You should get out there and catch some fish if you can stay dry. It looks like it's going to rain all weekend. But so with that, let's get into our Bible tidbit. All right, so you guys have probably heard of the part of the Christmas story that talks about the 3 wise men, right? The Magi, that come to visit Christ and worship him at shortly after his birth. They see a star, the Star of David. They go and follow that star, and it takes them to where Mary and Joseph are, and Jesus has been born. And they bring gifts, okay? So those gifts are gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And a lot of times, those gifts get overlooked. We're not sure why, you know, they brought them or this or that. Well, I wanted to dive into those gifts for a moment. The gold is signifying that Christ is a king, that Jesus is a king. They're believing the prophecy that Isaiah said that there would be a Davidic king on the throne. So they bring gold to signify that he's a king. Frankincense is used in, was used in the ceremonial sacrifices and worship at the time. The frankincense is kind of signifying that Christ is a priest head, that he is, you know, it talks about in Hebrews 12 that he is, you know, a priest in the order of Melchizedek, which I'll have to, that's a whole nother section I have to get into at another time. But the frankincense is an act of worship towards him, and also kind of signifying his priesthood. And then the myrrh is a spice that was predominantly used in burial. So they used the myrrh at that time to, in the wrapping of the dead bodies, to try and cover up the stench of death. But that wasn't its only use, but it is prophetic, just in the sense that they gave the myrrh. It's prophetic because you have the gold saying he's a king, the frankincense saying he's a priest, the myrrh foreshadowing his death. So his sacrificial death on the cross. So very interesting that they brought myrrh. Now, myrrh also had healing properties. Outside of just being an aromatic spice, it was something you could use to cleanse wounds. It helped heal, helped speed up the healing process for cuts and scrapes and stuff like that. It was an antiseptic. So that was another use that it had. Well, it's also interesting to think about the timeline of that story and how after those wise men left, they were supposed to go back to Herod and report to Herod as to where Jesus was, so Herod could come, quote unquote, worship him. But they were told in a dream by an angel to not go back to Herod because Herod meant to do the child harm. So they went a different way. Herod is worried about Jesus because everyone's talking about him being a king. And Herod does not want the challenge on his throne when this child is grown, even though that's not the kind of king that that Jesus was. That's what they perceived he was going to be, was someone who was going to overthrow the government. And so they were off on that, but that's what Herod thought. And so he put out an order that every male child under 2 years old would be killed. And so now they're on the run. Joseph and Mary and Jesus are on the run. And that gold probably came in handy as they scurried off into Egypt, and they needed some way of buying sustenance and all that kind of stuff. The frankincense probably came in handy because there were no synagogues or temples to worship in Egypt, and they could build their own altar and use the frankincense as part of their worship ritual to the Lord. And the myrrh probably came in handy when Jesus was running around and scraped his knee or had some kind of an ailment. The myrrh came in handy for treatment for such things. And so it was not only prophetic, but it was God giving them the things that they needed right then. And as just a crazy aside to all of that, if you read, I'm going off memory, I think it's Revelation 13. Bear with me while I scroll there as fast as I can. But in Revelation, nope, not 13. Oh, maybe it is. Oh, no, it's Revelation 12. Revelation 12 talks about the woman and the dragon. And it talks about a woman who is in pain, about to give birth, and she gives birth to a child, and the dragon is waiting to consume that child. But God protects the child and kind of sends them off. And if you look at that story, I don't want to make this into a 45-minute Bible tidbit, but if you read that story in Revelation 12, and then go and read the story about the Magi bringing the gifts to Jesus, and the edict that the king put out to have all the 2-year-old and under male children killed, and how they were basically on the run in Egypt, in the desert, it all makes sense with this story in Revelation. It's as if the story in Revelation is recounting what occurred at the birth of Jesus. And then there is a spot in Revelation 12 where it basically says that he could not, the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God. And so the dragon went to torment the other children of God. And you look at Israel's time spent in the desert, their slavery in Egypt, all that. It all ties into this story. It's all connected. The Bible is one big counter-reference to itself. It ties into as this beautiful story that is interconnected in more ways than you can imagine. So that's our Bible tidbit for today. It's a little all over the place, but that's how my brain works sometimes. I appreciate you guys reaching out over the dog thing, the Vishlas. I still don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but I had some really valuable information given to me by some of you listeners that actually own the Vishlas, so that was super helpful. I am kind of at this place now where I'm not sure. That still is the breed of dog that I want. I'm not sure if they're gonna do well being an outside dog. Everything I've read, everything I've looked at, and then what some of you guys sent me kind of confirmed that, like, the dog gets very attached to their owners. They're short-haired, so the cold isn't going to do them very well, and they're probably not going to do that well as an outside dog. They're going to be wanting to be inside. I just can't have an inside dog. My teenagers are allergic. Even though the Vishla is hypoallergenic to a point, it's not hypoallergenic, but it's less allergenic than other breeds of dog. It doesn't matter. My kids are just off the chart allergic. And so I cannot have an inside dog. So I don't know what I'm going to do. The wife is still a very, very, very firm no on having a dog at all. And so, I don't know. I still want one, but I can kind of understand where she's coming from. Our lifestyle is very busy, and I don't know that it would be the easiest thing to fit in. So, I don't know where I'm at with that. I'm just kind of going to play it by ear and hope that my desire to have a dog goes away. But if it doesn't, I'll twist her arm. I'll end up winning that argument if this keeps up. So she doesn't listen to the podcast, so she has no idea I just said that. So we're safe. If you guys would like to reach out to me, emptystringers@gmail.com. It's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Instagram is @emptystringers. No, @empty_stringers. You'd think I'd have this down by now. And then TikTok is emptystringers. Just check that out. If you want to book a trip, CappedMattParish.com. Like I said last time, it's going to be very weather dependent on the trips that I book. I don't want to take someone out in 15, 20 mile an hour wind this time of year, because the fish are already tougher to catch. But like I said, hey, if you want to go, we'll go. As long as we are in agreement on our expectations of what's going to happen on that trip. So thank you guys for listening. and telling your buddies about this podcast. We're slowly but surely growing. I would not have imagined that I could ever have this many people listening to a podcast solely about redfish with me speaking into a microphone by myself. So I do have some guests lined up, working on dates to get them on. So we'll have a few interview style conversations coming up. But nevertheless, I'll see you guys back here next week. It will be after Christmas. So I hope you guys have a very, very Merry Christmas. And we'll talk to you later.